Se mă rupi fel. Thank you, ok. I am Giorgio James, the chairperson of the interview panel and also the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Public Services Administration. Could you please confirm what is contained in your CV briefly, taking into account that we do have your CV with us? Briefly, can you confirm what is in there?
My name is Iskandar Marobifela. Maybe I should just quickly... Oh, I should quickly...
You will speak better without the mic, but I mean without the mask, but I'm not Donald Trump. I do respect mics, mask here, because it's a rule here in South Africa. But you can take it down.
No, my name is Kyle Marukfeller, as indicated in my CV. Maybe just to start with my qualification, I've got six different qualifications from six different universities. I started from the University of Zululand, worked for some years, then went to University of Natal, then went to University of Stellenbosch, and I did my LLB at the University of the Northwest, graduated my first LLM at the Tekkies University of Pretoria, then my second LLM at UNISA. I've worked different places, just to run quickly. I'm not sure if I'm supposed to explain why or how my qualification added my investment in my qualification, how they helped me achieve whatever I've achieved. Just to run through quickly, I can elaborate why I moved from honors to do LLB and LLM. There should be reason. Then my first job was with the foundation. I went to University of the Northwest for 3 years. I worked for ESCOM as an IR facilitator. From ESCOM, I went to marketing board. I worked for AgriServe, then the Department of Agriculture. From there, I went to join University of Pretoria for 3 years. I worked for City Power as general manager for a couple of years. I tried my own consultancy for close to 18 months, if not less. I'm currently with the PEN South African Language Board as a senior manager, human resources. I'm not sure if I'm supposed to elaborate my task and function.
You don't have, because I used an operative word briefly.
Okay.
The Public Service Commission, let me say this first. After I've asked my questions here to you, members of the panel will also ask you questions and they will introduce themselves to you before they ask questions. The Public Service Commission has a constitutional mandate to promote values and principles of Section 195 of the Constitution. Briefly, what is your understanding of the functions of the Public Service Commission and the values and principles governing public administration?
Maybe let me start with the two programs that govern the Commission is pursuing. It's the investigations and the HR reviews, policies reviews, monitoring and evaluation of achievement of the public service. There are different values and principles that the Public Service Commission must promote. One is the transparency within the public service to achieve its service delivery. The other one is to ensure that there's a promotion of sound labor relations. Third one is supposed to promote a development-orientated public service. Other values of the commission is to ensure that There's monitoring and evaluation of the problems of different departments. The last one is to report to the portfolio committee on the achievements or lack thereof once a year. What has been achieved as the Public Service Commission.
Members will ask their own questions and introduce themselves as they ask questions.
Good afternoon, sir. Thank you, Honorable Chair. My name is Maina Lesoma, member of the subcommittee. I haven't gone through your CV and also haven't listened to your response to the Honorable Chair's question. I'll start with a preamble just to make sure that we're on the same understanding of the PSC, and then followed by a question, and it will be two questions which are not linked. Okay. The Public Service Commission functions aims to, among others, to promote the values and principles of governing public administration, as it were, and to give directions aimed at ensuring that personnel procedures comply with the principles enshrined in the Public Service Act, as it were. Then the question would be, in your own view, sir, is the Public Service Commission making an impact in the public service, and how can the Public Service Commission reposition itself to make an impact given its wider mandate of promoting the values and principles governing the public administration? The last one for now from me, sir, through you, Chair, will be, constitutionally, in your own way or your own view, do you think spouse and children of political representatives or public representatives or former members should be prevented from doing business with the state? Provide the merit for your answer and provide possible solutions, please. Thank you very much.
Let me start you with the last one. I think it's morally wrong for politicians or members of the public servants or public service members to do business with the state. In the first place, there's always conflict of interest because they'll always want to push their own agenda. Besides the legislation, we are aware that Section 13C of the Public Service Regulation prohibit members of the staff members in the public service to do business with the state. And if you look at the regulation 8, I mean clause 8 of the Public Service Regulations, it not only prohibit staff members from doing business with the state, it also prescribes the minimum fine or sentence for both, which is 5 years, for doing business with the state. I think one cannot rule out of conflict of interest if they're allowed to do business with the state. The other one is the impact. I would say not much is known about the Public Service Commission. However, that does not take away the fact that they are not impactful, because we know that they do investigations on grievances that comes to the Public Service Commission, and we know that there are also challenges in terms of the staffing. There are also challenges with regard to budgets, which the public service could maybe need more staff members to be more effective as it's supposed to be. And the budget, if more budget is allocated to the Public Service Commission. I would say for the Public Service Commission to have more impact, they could look into collaboration or partnership with other institutions. One is looking at Public Protector, although the Public Protector also recently, given the malfeasance containing COCO pertaining to the procurement of PPEs, it can also partner with the NPA, also NPA or SIU, therefore their hands full. But one cannot just rule out to say, with further engagements and seeking collaboration with them, it can have more impact. I'm aware that the Commissioner of Companies and Intellectual Property School has already advised that for corruption to be minimized, the Companies Act needs to be amended. We know that currently, in terms of the Companies Act, only directors can be known, but the shareholding or shareholders are mostly not indicated when a company is incorporated with a commission for companies and intellectual properties. I would say for the commission to be still more effective, there has to be stakeholder engagement, public hearing. I'm not sure if I left out any from the question that you asked.
You may not know because he's expecting you to ask.
No,
She may not know that if you have left something.
I think he asked three questions.
Although you haven't given me the opportunity, he has, because he has given us the question, because I also asked for all suggestions as far as he's concerned. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Ntate Morope Fela. Morope Fela. Ntate, I am Miriam Kibi, a member of the panel, and I'm going to ask you two questions. My first question starts with the preamble, and then I'll ask you two questions from it, and then it will be the second question. The Constitution directs the public service to be professional, accountable, and development-orientated, and the NDP further amplifies this constitutional directive by identifying specific steps that need to promote the values and principles across public administration. Now, here's my question, Ntate. What is your understanding on the vision of professionalizing the public administration in the country? In your response, Mr. Kaello, could you please distinguish between cadre development based on the meritocratic and the mediocratic into the public administration? What could be the role of the Public Service Commission in ensuring professionalization of the public administration is institutionalized? Now, my second question to you, Ndadi, maladministration and corruption are cancers so ingrained in the public service, has become the new normal, and it's impacting negatively on the development in this country. Now the question is, what causes corruption, and how can the Public Service Commission play a meaningful role in preventing, reducing, and curbing corrupt practices in the public service? And Kikubori, in your response, please indicate current weakness in the system and propose your solutions in your response. I thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. With regards to professionalization of public service, we need to go back to the basics. We had a white paper on transforming public service, where we came with eight principles of Batho Pele. those eight principles of particular were guide to us with regard to how to professionalize the public service. And the more recently we have forgotten about those eight principles, especially when one thinks of transparency. It's very, very important that whatever the services that the public service offer, there must be transparency. Transparency as to issues like the budget. That will give people, the citizens, an idea how far the government can go. The issue of consultation. As public service members, we do not have all the answers. By engaging the public, we'll be in a position to know what quality, what quantity that the public needs, the services that we need to offer to the public. Issue of redress. When people are not happy, they are aggrieved by not receiving the amount and quality of services they deserve. They need to know where to go to. Where do they lodge the grievance to their satisfaction? And they need to be given feedback. Issue of access. If we are to render satisfactory and meaningful service to the public, we need to make it possible for the community to access, let's say, issues like social grants. You cannot expect everybody maybe to be flocking to long distances. What are the mechanisms that you can use for them to access that service without them suffering? The issue of cadre deployment. You know, mediocrity is the one that kills excellence in public service. We cannot allow a situation where people are deployed for the sake of loyalty to a party or not. Even if there has to be cadre deployment, the issue of meritocracy must come first. People must be qualified, people must be experienced to do the job, not on the basis of the ticket of party loyalty. Otherwise we are not going to achieve what we want to achieve. Some developed countries have achieved much successes because they emphasize on meritocracy. The emphasis on honesty, which brings me to the issue of corruption of maladministration. Corruption is true, it's rampant, because we have allowed individuals to run the organization. By that I mean we have compromised standards. Any organization is run by the four P's. Its policies, procedures, processes, and prescripts. If all those things are highly complied with, we'll be able to keep corruption and maladministration. If no prescript, any policy is not allowed to be violated, and there's management consequences for violation, then corruption will somehow be kept. Besides the four P's that I referred to, what is important is the systems, IT systems, because we are in an era of industrial revolution. If we have good systems where information is stored, which can also guide us as to which policy have been violated, we'll have a strong organization. And how to keep again corruption is to strengthen the issue of our anti-corruption guidelines or any mechanism. We need to give more protection to whistleblowers. We need to go out and have public awareness on whistleblowing, what constitutes a protected disclosure of information regarding maladministration and corruption. We need to encourage people with information to come forward and those people should be protected. We should not allow it to, because currently whistleblowers tend to be victimized ultimately. Public Service Commission needs to encourage that. We do have legislation in place. It's part of it could be covered from the policies. If we don't insist on that one, we are doomed. Hence I say the organization must not be run by individuals. It must be run by policies and systems. And we must adhere to policies, religious, and never allow anybody to violate them. There must be management consequences. If the AG has come up with a remedial action to say this must be done, we have made findings. People responsible, who are accountable, have to face the music. And it's quite interesting that the AG's teeth have been sharpened with the amendment to the Public Audit Act 2018, where the Auditor General can issue certificate of debt in the event somebody does not want to implement the recommendation of the AG, where there were irregular and wasteful expenditure and any form of corruption.
Thank you, Chairperson and Mr. Maruka Ferreira. I am Honorable Kibisi, a member of the Portfolio Committee and Subcommittee. I'm going to ask you two questions, and I would request you to listen carefully so that you won't miss. The first one is having a statement, thereafter will be a question. Professionalization of the public service can happen as a function of the meritocracy, which is a system of appointing or promoting staff based on the knowledge and skills. Therefore, the question would be, as a commissioner of the PSC, how would you advise government departments to institutionalize meritocratic ethos in the administration of the state in order to achieve professional public service? The last one will be very short. The question is, how do you think the PSC can strengthen its own oversight and also oversight by Parliament? Thank you.
Okay. I think professionalism should be promoted through coming up with policies where when somebody applies up front, there's a compliance with the requirements. Whenever a position is advertised, obviously that position is evaluated, job evaluated, and there are requirements in terms of competences necessary for that position, skills required in that position, and academic qualification for that position. The Public Service Commission needs to do audit time and again to check and monitor if whatever position had been filled in public service, there was a compliance with those requirements, so that we know that a person who's appointed there is appointed on merit. It's not favoritism. It's the person had what it takes to do that position, that job. For the public service to strengthen its oversight role, it has to do more audits. I know that it's expected to report at least once to Parliament, but I think it has to do more than that in terms of doing its audits, doing monitoring especially, so that when they come to Parliament, the monitoring is meaningful. It has all information that the portfolio committee may want to know. It has done all it did with regard to whether it's investigations of complaints, or any other things, whether it's about corruption that it has uncovered or is still in progress. That's how it can maybe strengthen its oversight on with regard to reporting to portfolio committee.
Mr. Marupifela, there's a member of this panel who is not with us here now. She is Honorable Clark. She will be asking you questions on the virtual platform. Honorable Clark?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My name is Michelle Clark, and I am a member of the committee. The first question is, it is believed that a responsive, ethical and values-driven public service depends on, among other things, the investigative function of the PSD, on public administration malpractices, particular in the areas of irregular appointments and curbing of corruption in government departments. How can the PSD strengthen its role of investigation of unethical conduct and play a meaningful role in assisting government to curb corruption in public administration? Next question. The power to appoint in South Africa is assigned by Section 3.7 of the Public Service Act. Ministers or MECs can delegate the powers to officials within the department. One, what are the major obstacles in the recruitment systems in the public sector? Is the public sector recruitment system effective in order to ensure professional and a capable state? And two, what can be the role of the PSC in eliminating unethical practices in the recruitment system in order to ensure public servants are appointed based on merit? Thank you.
Thank you very much. With regard to irregular appointments, I think it's easy for the public service to do audits regarding any appointments. Maybe that should be done on a monthly basis, quarterly basis. It's easier with the audit because the audits can show trail as to what the advert required with regard to the competences, the skills and the qualifications. Then if a person who is appointed to a position but did not qualify in terms of those criteria mentioned in the job advert, that will be an irregular appointment. Then the head of the department, the director general, needs to account for that. The issue of ethics. Ethics here can only be inculcated if people are held responsible, right from at the top, because normally the bus will stop with the director general. The director general must hold the deputy accountable if he or she picks up some irregularities. The same thing has to be cascaded down to all those who have authority with regard to appointments, right up from the lower level of people who are responsible for processing the application forms, from the stage of shortlisting for the interviews, to say they should have advice also to say these are the people who qualify. And then if someone who does not qualify, and then the person was just pushed through, somebody has to account. And the public service needs to hold those people responsible and report the matter to Parliament for further action. With regard to the power to appoint, I think the Act, Public Service Act, makes it clear who's supposed to be appointed. If there's any violation of those powers, then somebody has to be held appointable. And in terms of the audit, that should be done after the interview, periodically, whether it's quarterly or every month. The Public Service Commission will be in a position to know where are the gaps, and what to recommend to Parliament so that the management consequences can also be taken against all people who did not comply with the policies and procedures, as well as those who violated the Public Service Act when it came to appointments. I think if I've got the questions correctly.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Rosina Gomani. I'm the member of this panel. I have noted your extraction from the legislation as to, in terms of members of the public service doing business with government. But I want to put it to you that there is still a huge loss of public money due to corruption, especially with public servants doing business with state. In your own view, or in your own opinion, how could public servants be stopped from doing business with the state, since the legislation that we have just extracted from is there, that is preventing this practice, but the practice is still ongoing. So can you tell us, in your own view, how to do it to stop it? Thank you very much.
You know, the Act is in place. A particular provision, like I referred to Section 13C of the Public Administration Management Act, I referred also to Clause 8 of the Public Service Regulations. If people continue, the only thing to stop those people is through management consequences. They need to be brought to book through the disciplinary hearing. And those disciplinary hearings should not be prolonged, because they are aware. Normally in labor relations, they will ask you, are you aware of the rule? They are aware that the rule says you cannot do business with the state. And yet, they intentionally, this time we cannot say it was negligent. They intentionally went ahead and do business with the state with the intention of achieving corruption. They need to be disciplined. And more often than not, such offenses are gross. And once we say a misconduct is gross, there's no other sanction safe to dismiss them. Once people are aware that the state is serious about fighting corruption, seeing that some people have been dismissed, it's a good civic education for them. Definitely to be a deterrent. If you know that somebody has been doing business and you know that person, action was taken. This issue of not taking action, that's the one that creates breeding grounds for corruption. We know that there are a couple of 1,500 publicans who agree, and we even stall and delay the disciplinary hearings. We need to try by all means that we expedite those disciplinary hearings so that these people should know that the government is serious now. It means business. It needs to stop corruption at all costs.
Mr. Marupifela, do you have any question to put to the panel?
I don't have any question.
No question. Okay. Honorable Clark, did I skip you?
No, sorry, Chairperson. I've just received some information regarding the applicant. I don't know if you will allow me to follow up on a question, or would you allow me to do it in the discussion?
I think the applicant is here. We must not we must not speak about him. We must put whatever we have to him.
Okay, so will you allow me, Chairperson?
Yes, I will allow you, Honorable Clark.
Okay. If you could just elaborate, there's been some serious allegations against disciplinary issues that were raised against you when you were employed at Pan SLB. I note that your arbitration was in the High Court Chambers on the 20th, the 21st, and the 22nd of October. Would you be able to elaborate on the outcomes of those disciplinary issues? Thank you.
Mr. Marubivel, let me rule on this question. Yeah. I think we are putting you on the spot. Honorable Clerk, can I rule that this question, I'm not going to allow it. Let us not ambush the person who we are interviewing. We must not ambush him. He came here prepared to be interviewed. Now, if we are putting other things that have nothing to do with the interview, we are ambushing him. Secondly, we are still going to assess all the applicants at the end of the interview and the verification of everything that needs to be verified. We have to do that ourselves as the panel without embarrassing and ambushing the applicants. Thank you. I think, honorable members, I don't want to allow you to let's agree with this ruling that I have made.
Honorable Chair, as a principle, because we should have said up front, we should have, from the first candidate, asked the candidate whether do you have anything that will hold you back from being appointed in the position as a matter of principle. And
yes.
I agree with your ruling, Chair.
Okay. Thank you. You have said you don't have any question to put to us. I thank you, therefore, on behalf of the committee. You will be informed of the outcome of the interview because we are not yet through with the interview. Thank you very much. I don't want you to get into what I have ruled against. Thank you, Mr. Marupi. Thank you.